VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour, and I'm Steve VanWee, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Adam VanWee, Certified Financial Planner.
And we brought that up again this week, not so much for any other reason, except I'm going to talk a bit about that during the course of the day, and why you should look for one when you're shopping around for somebody to give you a hand. It is the 16th of July. It is absolutely spectacular out there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Beautiful day.
Just a couple little wispy clouds, 84 degrees on my car on the way in. And if you don't live in Florida, good. Traffic would be a lot worse.
Yeah, there's enough of us here.
Yeah, I agree. But you should. You should think about it. Anyway, for our regulars, welcome back. Without you folks, we might as well not show up every Saturday, as we always do and intend to keep doing. Unlike so many shows, we are live every week. So if you want to help us out, or if you just want to talk about something you want to talk about, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 222-TALK. That's area code 904-222-8255. Now, gosh, what a week. That bumper music that we play on the way in, that's Pink Floyd. The name of the song is Money.
Very appropriate.
The sound you hear is a cash register ringing up. That sound was heard across this country this week. A lot.
Well, for a number of reasons, really. Look at the retail sales report, and ka-ching, it was fantastic.
Sure, yep. So tell us what happened, if you can get the smile off your face long enough to talk, right?
Well, I just have to start by saying, if anyone says or tells me that they saw this week coming, they're lying.
I saw it coming. I knew it was going to be the week from the 9th to the 16th.
Yeah, but you didn't see what was going to happen actually happening.
No.
No. I did. I got it half right, actually. I thought for sure that we would set some new highs this week.
Well, I've been saying right along that we were going to shoot for 18.5, and I thought we were going to make it. I did not have any idea we were going to do it right now.
Well, I actually thought we might, but I also thought it would pull back immediately, and that did not happen.
We actually had a confirming day yesterday.
Yeah.
At the last minute.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty flat yesterday,
yeah.
But... you know.
But it stayed above 18.5, which is a good thing.
Yeah, so that means that the current bull market has been in place for 7 years.
Now we're going to have a trivia question that's related to that pretty soon.
And that started on March 6th of 2009. So the Dow shot up by 2% this week, closing out the week at 18,516. The S&P and the NASDAQ both gained about 1.5%, and all three are now positive for the year. The NASDAQ had been lagging and have been a little bit negative, but no longer.
Yep, all my red numbers disappeared on my little cheat sheet here.
Yep. The Dow is now up 6.3% for the year, which is 2 to 3 times what many forecasters were calling for the whole year. So,
and they still might be right.
They could be. They could be. The big question on everybody's mind is whether or not this market makes sense. Well, I think it might surprise some of you, but I think it does make sense. Now, this doesn't mean we won't see a pullback in the near term, but in the longer term, I think there are several reasons that the market could push higher. I'll talk about that in a minute. I could also make an easy argument against it, though, so, you know, it could go either way.
No, that's because the sentiment does not match the market performance.
Yeah.
So you have to look at what's under the performance, not in terms of everybody's giddy about the market and business and all that. There are reasons for this.
But that's a good thing. When the market rises on for good reasons, we like to see that. We don't like it when it's on sentiment alone, because that is bound to come back down.
I don't like it when it's on Fed policy alone either. So there's some combo out there.
Yeah.
Actually, consumer sentiment is rising a bit, as you
It rose
mentioned.
A lot this week, yeah. One look at the price-to-earnings ratios in the S&P 500 will tell you that right now, they're extremely high compared to historical numbers. And we definitely need to see a better earnings season to kind of justify those numbers. But we've gotten off to a pretty good start so far.
Yeah, the financials are strong. I still don't like them, as you know, but you
I know.
Do.
I do.
Yeah. And so far, you're right.
Yeah, well, this week I am, but that could change again. We've got several coming out next week that could reverse the trend, but we'll see. So why do I think the market can push higher? Two reasons: economic data and earnings. First, I want to talk about the economic data. There was a lot of good news this week, most of it pointing towards an increase in economic activity for the remainder of the year. Retail sales that I mentioned earlier for June came in much higher than expected. In fact, it beat the estimate by 500%, which is pretty amazing. The biggest gains were in building materials, and the only sectors that pulled back were clothing and bars and restaurants, which is kind of a reverse of the trend we were seeing in the first half of the year.
They're still historically high, though.
They are.
It's a little anomaly in the figures.
The CPI came in a little bit weaker than expected, but still showed a positive gain.
Yeah, but the PPI didn't.
And the PPI beat expectations. So the combination of those things should tell you two things. One, inflation is here. And two, don't sell your tips if you own any.
Exactly. The PPI, for those of you who may not know, that measures price increases at the provider level, the manufacturers, the importers, and that sort of thing. In other words, it's the producer of whatever's going on. And then the CPI is, once they're consumed by the consumer, it measures that. And there is a lag in those two, because when you buy something at wholesale and it costs you more, you have to turn around and raise that for the retail. So look for the CPI to be up next month, I'm estimating.
Yeah, and this, although you're going to pay more for things, it's actually really good news if you're on Social Security, because the government is going to have a really hard time.
Are we going to talk about that today?
Yeah, they are going to have a hard time not giving an increase this year.
Yeah.
The JOLTS report was one of the few misses this month, with job openings dropping sharply to 5.5 million openings. But again, that's still a pretty historically high number, so it's not altogether terrible news. The quit rate declined this month as well, which is very unusual in a tight labor market. And the quit rate is something that, it's really not returned to a normal level for a good jobs market like this. It's surprising. I think that people are maybe reluctant to leave their jobs for a better job because they lived through 2008 and maybe were unemployed for a long time, or the jobs out there just aren't as good as what they currently have.
I think there's a real strong argument to be made there.
There's also a question about why the labor force participation rate is so low right now, and I honestly can't figure that one out. If anyone has any ideas, give us a call and we'll discuss it, but it's a strange anomaly.
If you look at U6, what we usually see is U3, the regular old unemployment rate. U6 historically would be down in the 7% range based on the level of the current U3. It's over 9. That means there are an awful lot of people out of the job market, discouraged, mm-hmm. not looking for a job because they're discouraged. And you would think, with all the jobs that are coming up, though they're not fabulous jobs, and I do have a couple more things to say about that too, but you'd think that more of them would say, well, maybe my chances of getting a job are better right now than they have been in a long time, and they start coming in. There's probably a little lag in that too.
There could be, but it's been going on for a while
it
now.
It has been. So, and maybe they're just happy to sit home and do nothing.
Maybe. So that's a strong possibility.
Well, that can get under your skin, I'm sure, if you've been unemployed for a long time. But what they're living on, I have absolutely no idea. All right, trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. Adam mentioned that this is now the officially second longest bull market in history at 7 years and some change. The trivia question is, how long was the longest bull market in history to the nearest even year? So if anybody can come up with that one, we have a Publix gift certificate, compliments of First Coast Alarm. Now, after the break, I'm going to be talking about some things like Medicare and Social Security, passing comments on the current hot topics in the business. Adam's got some stuff. But don't go anywhere or you'll miss something. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.
And we're back.
How about those commercials?
Whoops.
2 weeks in a row. Commercial-free radio. Hey, if they don't want to pay the bills, we'll take the time. No problem. Not sure what's going on. But as I said last week, that's live radio for you. Yeah, never know.
Keeps you on your toes.
All right. Well, let's just say this segment, this long segment, sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. And I'm telling you, Troy is one busy guy these days.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. You can stand out there and watch your grass grow these days. Unfortunately, weeds and everything too, but wow, what a deal. So if you're tired of cutting your own grass and trimming up your hedges and all that on your own in this hot weather, give Troy a call at 662-9794. We do.
Yeah, we both use him, and he is excellent.
He is, and he's very reliable. And they do a lot of things as far south as Palencia, so pretty much whatever area of town you're in, give them a shout-out and see what happens. Adam talked a bit about Social Security and inflation and that sort of thing. The inflation rate is measured several ways. Of course, the Federal Reserve has its own goofy way to do things. They have their own goofy way of doing almost anything. Theirs is called the PCE, or the Personal Consumption Expenditures Rate. And what it does is it deflates the rate of inflation quite a bit, actually. They use it because they think it's more representative. At least that's their excuse for using it. In my humble opinion, that is nothing more than a cheap excuse. It is not something that I would hang my hat on. But what happened now, and I'm going to show you exactly, because they influence the policy. So I said I was going to talk about Medicare and Social Security. Here it comes. This month's numbers are adding up to, and it's not a full done deal yet, but we're getting close to the end of the federal fiscal year. They're adding up to another year of tame inflation, even though I don't believe it. You shouldn't believe it. And I'm going to interrupt here because we have a caller on the line, and we always put them to the head of the line, and that's not going to change. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi there. I'm going to take a wild guess on the bull market and guess 20 years.
You're too high, but we have a bracket now. We know that seven years is second and 20 is too high, so anybody else can take a shot in there. Anything else we can answer for you today?
That's it. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the call. All right, 20 years is too much. All right, so the intelligent powers that be inside the Beltway have determined that those of us who are currently collecting Social Security are going to get a raise next year. We didn't this year for the fourth time, I think, since the year 2000 or 2010, I guess. We did not get a raise because there was, quote, no inflation. And when the Chapwood Index is computed for June 30th, hang on, because I'll tell you the truth. Anyway, the PCE that's used by the Fed has come to this realization. So, sitting down, everybody who's over 62, the estimated increase for 2017 is a whopping 0.2%.
That is unbelievably low.
That is 0.2%. The average Social Security recipient receives $1,347 a month. That means his or her increase is going to be, you ready?
I'm ready.
$2.69 a month.
Wow. Don't spend it all in one place.
Be still my foolish heart. So there's the good news. Now here's the bad news. You may have thought that was bad news, but no. Everything's relative. Although you will pay taxes on it, assuming you're not in the zero bracket, you won't actually see it. The agency that granted it to you is taking it away from you for the increased costs of Medicare. Easy come, easy go, right? But wait, it gets worse. Medicare Part B premiums are scheduled to increase by more than that. Thankfully, those of us who are already on Medicare B and collecting Social Security benefits are protected by a new last year's law called the Hold Harmless Rule, which caps our Medicare premium increase at the amount of Social Security increase. So we will pay $2.69 on average for the increase because we're already collecting. So while they take it all, they don't take more than the increase. Why don't I feel better?
Because you're actually not going to see any more money in your wallet this year from Social Security.
Oh, and it gets even worse, folks. If you happen to be 65 years old, are collecting Social Security, or aren't collecting Social Security, but are on Medicare, which you're not even full retirement age if you're 65, that comes at 66. So anyone who is on Medicare but not collecting Social Security gets to pay the increase for the rest of us. Isn't that special? Thanks, guys. So about 30% of Medicare enrollees are the people not collecting Social Security. So they're waiting to get their 8% annual increases. Very good financial planning. Unless you need it, it's a very good idea to wait. But here's the rub. As your income rises, the cost of Medicare Part B premiums go up. In 2016, the maximum premium is $389 a month, compared to $104.90 that most of us pay. The top rate is slated to go to $467.20, which is a 20% increase. So the government that reports to you an inflation rate of 0.2% wants 20% more for your Medicare Part B premium. And they sell you that at gunpoint when you're 65. If you don't sign up for it by the time you're 66, you're going to pay a premium on your premium forever. In other words, you get penalized for not doing this. Now, for the rest of us, $104.90 is scheduled to go to $149 a month, which is a really big increase of about 40%. But if you're already collecting Social Security, it'll be $2.69. Now, this could be corrected by Congress. It is not out of the question. What's it going to do? It's going to make the entire Medicare system go belly up a lot sooner. The government wants those of you who are not covered by the Hold Harmless rule to pay for the 70% of us that are. Now, I don't want you to do that, people, because it goes against good financial planning, common sense, fair play, and everything else I've always stood for. So when I tell you I can't make this stuff up, all you have to do is pardon my grammar. Alrighty then, what good am I if I can't come up with a solution? Unfortunately, my suggestion only applies to a very small subset of American workers. It's applicable only if you're going to be 65 or older in 2016. In other words, you were born in 1951. These people need to take a very good look at filing a little bit early for their Social Security. That will lock you in to the $2.69 type raise instead of the 20 to 40% raise. Now, it will cost you just a little bit of your monthly benefit forever, but you can easily calculate what the break-even point of that is. Now, I was born in 1950, and this same time last year, the same thing was happening. I took a look at the numbers, and I filed for Social Security early because it didn't make any sense not to, because I was going to be penalized so much for not taking it. So if you are celebrating your 65th birthday this year, if you were or did, you're born in 1951, there is a tremendous possibility that you are going to save a lot of money if you go ahead and file for your benefits this year. But don't just do it. Look at the numbers. And if you need any help, either call the show, 904-222-8255, or call the office, 904-685-1505, and we would be happy to talk to you. Now, last year for me, it was a no-brainer. It might be a no-brainer for some of you folks, but not everything is, because you get penalized a couple of different ways, and you have to know what your numbers are before you make an intelligent decision. Everybody knows it's getting increasingly difficult to live on a fixed income as prices for nearly everything constantly seem to be going up. Yet, through all the smoke and mirrors, the true rate of inflation has been hidden not just by this president and this Congress, but for decades and decades. The more you know, the more likely you are to be able to control some of the expenditures that we all have to make, and one of those is Medicare Part B. So, as I said, if you have any questions about it, you want to talk about it on the show, fine. If you want to talk about it in the office, fine. But I'm especially speaking to the 1951 birthdays out there, and there are a lot of you, 10,000 a day are turning 65, then you might want to take a really good look at doing this and save the potential of you getting a giant increase in your premiums.
And also remember that is that 8% raise is actually calculated monthly, if
pro
I'm not
rata,
mistaken.
Yes.
So exactly. That's about 2/3 of a percent every month. So sure. The later in the year you wait,
you're 65 and a half, then it's only a 4% that you're
right.
That you're foregoing. All right. Well, that said, why don't you tell the folks who we are, what we do, and where we do it?
Yeah, I definitely will. And we are fee-only financial planners located in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off of Butler Boulevard, so easy to get to from all points in the city. And we're also online at www.banweefinancial.com. We add a lot of new stuff to our site every week. We have a blog on there, and we post at least twice a week, so lots of good information. A lot of it we cover on the show, but some we don't, so check back often. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/VanWeeFinancial and Twitter at VanWeeFinancial. If you want to reach us outside of the radio show, call 904-685-1505, or you can email us at info@VanWeeFinancial.com.
And as the only father-son team that we know of in the area, we do everything together. All client meetings are held together, and we do not charge any extra for that, since I basically work for nothing.
That's not true.
Oh, well, said basically. It's all relative.
No, but we're very transparent with all of our fees, mm-hmm. and the only way we make money is by fees. We don't charge commissions on anything, and our fees are published right on our website. So if you're interested and want to find out how we make money and where it comes from, you can go to VanWeeFinancial.com.
And in our field, the financial advisory, financial planning, whatever aspect of it you want to talk about, there's always things going on in the country, in the world, in Congress and whatever. And I've been accumulating some of the hot topics that I wanted to give you my take on. We talk about pretty much any aspect of personal financial planning, investing and all that. Some of these topics are germane to our business. So, you know, some of the things that go on in Congress are. So they're worth talking about. Periodically, from here on, I intend to accumulate these things. And when it gets to be a whole page full of things that are really pertinent to what you guys should know and what we need to know, then I'll tell you about them. One of the biggies lately has been elder abuse. It's been a hot topic on the show and in the media. Well, it's now made its way to Congress, which is good. However, as usual, the congressional proposal is weak and narrow. The idea as proposed is to protect advisors from being prosecuted under privacy laws for reporting suspected abuse. It's called the Senior Safety Act, and it has passed the House. It allows advisors to report suspected abuse, here's the key, to government agencies, but it does not pertain to family members of the suspected victim. This is too narrow, but we addressed that last week, if those of you, if anybody remembers this, with something we use personally that we call the Safety of Withdrawals Letter, which allows us to have a client give us permission when we see something we don't think is normal to call a family member or other trusted representative. That's what the Safety of Withdrawals Letter allows for us. We all know that as we get a little older, some of our decision-making capacity gets diminished a bit. Present company excluded.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. But now there's going to be what I call step one going through Congress, and I think it will pass. And it's kind of in the same vein as the fiduciary rule, which makes all of those of us who call ourselves financial advisors and those of us who actually are financial advisors, makes all of us act the same and put the interests of our clients ahead of our own interests, which to me is just the biggest dose of common sense in the world, but it's not heavily practiced.
And we've always done it, though.
Yes. Common sense, uncommon sense, whatever you want to call it, it's a good thing to get this started at the top levels in the country. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder that our trivia question is still out there, sponsored by First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. The current bull market is now officially just over 7 years long, making it the second longest bull market in American stock market history. How many years long was the longest bull market, two rounded to the nearest number? We know that seven is too low because we're only second. And we know from a previous guesser that 20 is too high. So you've got a bracket and it's not too hard to hit it. All right. I wanted to wrap up a couple more things about the hot topics throughout Congress and the industry. One of them is accredited investors. Accredited investors are people with $1 million, not counting the equity in their homes, or whose annual income is over $200,000. The reason they even define it is because only accredited investors can buy unregistered securities offered by many brokers and advisors. Now, the Investment Advisor Association wants all clients of registered investment advisors, people like us, to be labeled accredited. Here's my take. No!
What do you really feel?
I don't like it.
Okay.
Bad idea. The gate to trouble for many investors is through the unregistered securities offered by unscrupulous advisors and brokers. Even the most well-meaning advisors and brokers out there who are going to peddle these things might believe in them. Now, if you want a classic example, Google Raymond James and ski area. You want to get scared about what people are selling you that's unregistered? Just look at what's happened. Millions and millions of dollars. I've talked about that on the show before. I was kind of making fun of the fact that they picked people in Miami to develop a ski area up north. But anyway, I do not like unregistered investments. I want every single investment for every single one of my clients to be visible to them 24/7 on a third-party independent website. Tell you folks, losing control means just exactly what it sounds like. Don't lose control.
Not to mention trade it on a public exchange.
Absolutely. So the prices are accurate.
Exactly. Otherwise, you don't know really what your investment is worth if you can't get a fair value in a marketplace
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. Okay, cost of child care is a hot topic. The average cost throughout the country now of having two kids in child care is about $18,000. Many candidates for public office are clamoring for, quote, affordable daycare, which to them means free. Bad idea. A better approach would be to examine whether the second spouse working is actually providing more stability financially in your household. For over 30 years, we have been analyzing the real cost of taking a second job versus the real income from it. And too many times, especially with the cost of daycare as high as it is now, you find out that by the time the second spouse goes to work and pays for all the work expenses, travel, daycare, they're bringing home nothing. Do your kids a favor. Take a good look at that. If more kids were raised by a stay-at-home parent and it isn't punishing you financially to do so, the world could only eventually become better off. Another hot topic these days, income inequality. How many times do we have to listen to that one? Have you ever heard a substantive proposal for correcting income inequality that isn't soak the rich?
Well, it's just double talk for a tax increase.
That's all it is. And every time it's tried, it fails. Every time they redo the tax system, the rich get richer and the poor get richer too, but they don't think so. But the gap widens instead of narrowing. Perhaps if we just took off all the shackles from the jobs producers, the income inequality would have its own built-in correction mechanism. The other cause of this, the underlying cause of it, is tax-free compensation like health insurance and retirement benefits. It goes all the way back to World War II. Milton Friedman, it goes back into the Nixon era in the 70s when he put in wage and price controls, and all of a sudden fringe benefits were not covered by the wage and price controls, so they became a bigger and bigger portion of compensation. The W-2 doesn't tell the story anymore, folks. So despite all the horror stories of what would happen if we uncoupled fringe benefits such as health insurance from the workplace, if you did it right, and everybody had to buy their own, they would maintain the cost. You'd get equal tax treatment for that as you do now, so nobody's actually paying much for it, but you got to take control. So much of what we're trying to do in this country right now is take control out of the hands of the bureaucrats and put it back in the hands of people because they're so much better at it. Now, I have the ultimate solution.
What's that?
Off the top of your head, not hitting you?
Nope.
Fair tax.
Oh, sure.
The who cares what your fringe benefits are, fair tax. Anybody who wants to know about it, look it up, fairtax.org. It is the answer to not just this problem, but to virtually every revenue problem in this country. It unshackles business people. It is just the best idea ever. And we have historically been gathering support for it. I think it's probably higher now than it's ever been, but nobody will do it if we don't make noise about it. So join the Fair Tax Organization and tell your friends and read the book. It's called The Fair Tax Book. Pretty easy to remember.
And if you're not familiar with it, we have a link on our website to a YouTube video that explains it very clearly and just a couple minutes long. You'll walk away with a much better understanding.
Okay. Now, this last topic is millennials. And Adam and I have been talking about this, and he actually has a very good take on some of this. The millennial generation is very entrepreneurial-minded. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't get to go out and do a bunch of startups until they get old enough because they're straddled with a lot of college debt. They have fixed payments that are very, very high, and some of them don't want to live with their parents all that long, the good ones. I digress.
But a lot of them do it anyway.
So that's one of the reasons that a lot of the startups now are done by people 55 and older. So Adam told me something that I thought fit into this situation very well and probably causes these statistics to be a little underreported, I guess. Tell the folks what it was you were telling me that
sure.
I absolutely agreed with.
I think that the millennials are actually one of the biggest founders of their own small businesses, but they're not in the type of businesses that this particular piece of information is talking about. This is talking about starting a corporation where you go out and sell a product or you provide a service. A lot of these young people are going out and becoming 1099 employees and going from gig to gig, and they call it the gig economy. And there's thousands of them, and they work in a large portion of them work in the IT world, and they'll go do a job for 6 months for somebody, get 1099 income, and then they'll get referrals to go to somewhere else. And so they really are starting their own business, but that business is just themselves. And that is one form of entrepreneurship, and it's actually very impressive that they're able to do it, because if you don't do good work, you're not going to get that next gig. So I'm very impressed by the people who are able to go out and do that and make a really good living doing it.
You should contact the people who wrote this story and tell them that. I think that if there were a way to measure that well, and I don't know that there is or isn't, I think that would be a very enlightening look at the younger generation.
Yeah, because the great thing about doing it that way is that it doesn't require a lot of capital. You maybe spend $1,000 on a laptop and you're in business. So,
well, and a couple of neckties and button-down shirts.
Not in that generation. No, and that's going the way of the dodo.
Yeah. But I thought that was a good take, and it was something I wanted to talk about, and I kind of got my eyes open just because we were discussing a little bit during the break. All right, here's another one, Steve's Beefs. This is not necessarily the hot topic of the world, but it's something that just keeps popping up in front of my eyes on my computer, and it bugs me to no end. There's a website called advisorworld.com. Yeah, I'm naming names. How's that?
I don't think I've been on that one.
They're advertising the highest annuity returns. I've got it right in front of me. If you stare very hard right at the center of your radio, you'll see this headline, 2016 highest annuity returns. Now, right below that is a line that says 2015 statement returns of 16.1%. Okay, where do I begin?
That so many places to start on that one.
Statement returns of 16.1% for 2015. What was the interest rate in 2015?
Low.
Fraction of a percent. Now, there's one more little symbol at the end of this line that says 2015 statement returns of 16.1%. That is an asterisk.
Go figure.
And guess where that asterisk goes? I'll tell you after the break. We got to take a hard break, so don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is still out there. We just reached 7 years on the current bull market, made it official. It's the second longest bull market in history. How many years long, rounded to the nearest year, was the longest bull market in history? We know that 7 is too small. We know that 20 is too high. So if you want to pick up a real easy Publix gift card, we've got a way to do it. A quick follow-up on my advisor world. 2016 highest annuity returns. 2015 statement returns of 16.1%. Asterisk. Look over here. The asterisk says participation rates may vary. Consult with your financial advisor. Come on, folks. A return, an annuity return, is comprised of two things: a very small piece of interest and a very large component of your money, which they're giving back to you. Isn't that special? George.
Yes, sir.
What's up today?
I think I recall that $0.8 trillion was given to the Obamacare system, and haven't heard much about it since.
That's pretty much true.
Did that just go into building the website? Or?
No, that was partly that. But all of the exchanges were funded, too. And if you look up at the, if you Google it today, more and more of the state exchanges are going under. There were, Illinois right now is the one that's in the deepest trouble, but there are several others. In fact, there was one article I read, I don't know how accurate it is, but that they all might fail by the end of this year.
That seems a bit extreme, but...
It does, but we're already over half that have failed, and now there are several more in trouble, and some of the big guys have pulled out of some of the big states, and some of the others are asking for raises up to 16% in premium values. So, yeah, the worst part of that, George, that money's gone. We'll never get it back.
Sad state of affairs.
It is indeed. So, I hope everybody votes carefully. So, did you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
Oh, yeah, let's say 10 years.
Oh, you're close, but you're low. Okay. So we got a ways to run with this one yet.
All right.
All right, thanks, George. Appreciate the call.
I'm holding.
Okay, we got you. You're on.
Yes. He said 10 years.
Yeah, he guessed 10, and it was too low.
Too low. I'll say 12.
You say the right thing.
Perfect.
We have a winner, and I'll tell you, it ended on March 24th of the year 2000. Ran from 88 to 2000. That's when the bubble burst on the tech market and everything started to go south. I was just mentioning to Adam, I've had this discussion many times, including last night. That was under Clinton. Everybody talks about the great Clinton economy, but they never talk about the last year when the Dow was down 46%, the NASDAQ down 46, Dow down 24, and S&P down 27. So it's good for people to remember. All right, we'll put you on hold, and Alan can get your address, and we will send you a card.
How much is it for?
$25 at Publix.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Hey, with the price of groceries these days, they're almost like gold.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Paulette. Appreciate the call. Good. We had a winner. 12 years. So a lot of people are afraid of this bull market because it's so long. It's the second longest in history. But we got a long ways to go to get into fear of longevity.
Definitely. And if you look at how the increases have gone, it's actually been a relatively tame.
It's only 220% or something like that.
Yeah, which over 7 years is not outrageous.
No, not bad at all. All right. The market coming up this week, we don't usually do a lot of what's coming up, but I think this is going to be a particularly, I'll use the term, interesting week or two in the market because of things that are happening and happening here.
Definitely, and most of that revolves around earnings. And earnings season always kicks off with Alcoa. That's considered the company that is the first one to release their numbers, and historically it's always marked the beginning of earnings season.
Symbol AA.
Right.
They're just going alphabetically for
makes
once.
Sense. Yeah. They kicked it off this week with a bang. They beat on earnings and revenue on increased aluminum prices. So that is always a good thing when you get off to a good start like that. And then financials started kicking in shortly after that, and we saw a lot of good reports. JP Morgan and some of their peers had a really strong quarter, and they were all expected to have a really weak quarter. So that is definitely positive news out of the financial sector.
And speaking of that, I saw that loan quantities are back up to pre-recession level, and I wasn't aware they were growing that fast. So that's a very bullish indicator.
It is. That means that banks are adding to their balance sheets, and over time, as those interest rates come up, they'll be adding to their earnings and profits, hopefully.
Yep.
That's why I like the financial sector right now.
Well, I'm warming up to it.
So next week, the earnings season really kicks into high gear. We're going to see names like Bank of America, Charles Schwab, IBM, Netflix, and Starbucks all reporting. So I think by the time we're sitting here next week doing this show, we should have a much better sort of feel on how the season is going to go. And we also have a bunch of economic data next week, a lot of it revolving around the housing market. So we'll talk more about that next week as well. So that's all I got.
We've been kind of tossing around the what ifs. We had the situation in Nice, had the situation in Istanbul. Our market cruised right through it. And Adam's done a lot of research on this, and we put this out in some of our newsletters too. Those things, as horrible as they are, do not have any long-lasting impact on our stock market.
In fact, I have some data on
Good.
It. The only one that really messed with our markets was the big one, which was 9/11. Mm-hmm. On 9/10, the market closed at 9,605. On 9/11 at 9:03 a.m. when the second tower was hit and it was clear that the U.S. was under attack, trading was actually halted until the 17th. On the morning of the 17th, the market opened at 9,580 and immediately fell, dropping just over 659 points, representing a 6.9% drop. By the end of that week, the market had fallen further, down to 8,235, or just over 14%. However, by November 8th of 2001, the market had once again closed higher than it opened on 9/11. In October, the market had an intraday high that was above the 9/17 open, but it didn't close there. So basically, the recovery took less than 2 months. And that was the biggest one that we've ever experienced, or the biggest reaction to an attack like that.
And if you go back, there was nothing that triggered the September 19th, 1987 crash of 30%, except that it was so overblown. It had run up. That was more similar to the crash of 29, where things just got out of hand. So it didn't take an event to do that. It was just some arbitrary Friday, and people got a little heated up, I guess, and sold it off. And that took about 13 months, I think, to get back. Although, strangely enough, 1989 wasn't even really a bad year in the market. Or 87. 87, excuse me.
I don't know.
That was 87. And other than that, we've been through an awful lot of devastation and such in all over the world, and it has not really done that much.
I've got a few more examples.
Yeah, do.
Look at the...
It scares people, and that's why I think some people tend to overreact in the market. So yeah. Anything you can do to calm the
sure.
crowds.
Boston Marathon bombings, the market fell 1.8%, and it took less than a month to recover. The Paris attacks, the market recovered in 1 day. Madrid train bombings, it took a week. The USS Cole in Yemen, it recovered in less than a month after a 3.7% drop. So you're kind of seeing the... Especially as, I hate to say it, but we get a little bit desensitized to these type of things. The market takes less time to recover recently than it used to even. So it's unfortunate that that's the world we live in, but it's true.
Now, there's a technical aspect of that too. When something goes on in other parts of the world and there is a lot of money invested all over the world, a lot of it flocks right to the shores of the good old USA.
That's true. We are considered the safe haven to some degree.
Yeah, we're in a very, very strange period of time where things like commodities are rising, the market is rising, the equities, the bonds are doing well, interest rates still stink and probably will for a good long time yet. So you've got to maintain your asset allocation. If there's one thing that you can pull away from this 18,500 level the Dow finds itself at for the last 2 days, it is if you've ever considered a good time to rebalance your portfolio, I think now is the time to talk about it.
I would agree with that.
Call your advisor, or better yet, come and see us, and we'll talk about all of that, and we'll get into that and much more next week. I hope everybody stays safe through the Cleveland Republican convention, because I'm not all that hopeful that it'll go flawlessly. But don't make any crazy decisions. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.